Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment, where your questions and comments matter. At 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment. I'm Harold Fisher. It doesn't just happen on the school playground anymore. Bullying has evolved. It's become a much more serious problem for young people. This is National Bullying Prevention Month, and tonight we're taking a closer look at bullying and what you can do about it. My guests are Rochelle Wilson, anti-bullying advocate, and Brenda Barron, director of public policy with the Gay, Lesbian, Straight Education Network. Lines are open. Give us a call at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. You can certainly tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Ladies, thank you so much for joining me. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
I wanted to start with some numbers here that may be a little surprising to some people. According to some federal government statistics, some 28% of U.S. students, grades 6 to 12, have experienced bullying. We have 30% of young people admit to bullying. Some 70% of young people say they have seen it in their schools. It goes on and on and on. Some 55% of LGBTQ students have experienced some form of cyber bullying. I'll start with you, Rochelle. What's going on with bullying in 2018?
It's a major problem, Harold. It's a problem that has really existed for a very, very long time. And I think the root of it is really we are not creating spaces that are safe, respectful, welcoming, and inclusive to all. And so when we think about bullying is really just this behavior of intentional harmful acts that is designed to create fear. And so these acts are predicated on perceived issues that one may have, and it could be connected to their gender, their race, or even their sexual orientation. I was appalled when I read an article featured in the Journal of American Medical Association that shared that one out of five children have been bullied by their peers. Mm-hmm. So that means that our children are actually going to school with children that are actually bullying them. And there's a lack of appreciation for understanding differences. Being bullied is really an issue at the peer-to-peer level.
When you say that, what do you mean peer-to-peer?
It's happening at the peer level. That means that a five-year-old could be in a classroom with another five-year-old and could potentially be experiencing some very harmful behaviors from another student.
But let me say this. Brenda, bullying, you could argue that it is as old as Cain and Abel. And yet it is a much more significant issue now in 2018. Why is it so prevalent now and so much more different than, say, 20 or 30 years ago?
Well, in some ways, it's not so different. I mean, GLSEN has been doing a biannual survey of LGBTQ students. Those are lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and questioning students for almost the past 20 years. And we actually have seen a decline in some of the bullying and harassment that the students have seen until recently. This most recent survey released just last week, actually, when we saw the bullying for students on their sexual orientation level off for the first time, and actually against transgender students increase a little bit. And so the bullying has been going on for a while. GLSEN started really addressing bullying as an issue back then. I think part of the rise or the conversation is we talk about bullying in the general media. We see it at all levels of our leadership and just out in the community. However, what we can note is that students also are, when it comes to LGBTQ students, are much more confident in being themselves. And the question is, how do we as adults, how does the community, how do teachers work to help those students become their best selves?
But what I'm getting at, and let's put a fine point on
sure.
it. When I was in school, okay, we didn't have the internet. Bullying stopped in the school play yard, and that's the thing that I was kind of getting at.
Okay.
Because now you cannot escape it. Whether you are LGBTQ, whether you're straight, whether you're gay, the point of the matter is that it comes into your homes. It is in social media. And so not to say that, you know, the surveys are not accurate, but I think the reality is that there was a way to escape it until it was addressed, or perhaps even you grew out of it by going to high school, mm-hmm. by graduating from high school.
Definitely. I mean, I think that the way that we as adults, but also as young people communicate now constantly on social media in the moment, yes, it's pervasive and it goes beyond the schoolyard for sure.
Definitely.
And that impacts how a student is, a child at home, an adolescent, how they interact for sure. And that's where making sure that we collectively create environments that students that can learn how to communicate with each other respectfully is so important, and really talk about differences.
But I think that's a great argument. But kids are immature. Kids have no filter. I had no filter.
Right.
My peers when I was a kid, we have no filter. Is that really a logical way? Rochelle, from your perspective, to address this, because it happens on so many levels.
I think it does. I want to also just note that you mentioned bullying beyond the playground. And there's a great book that I've used as a resource that talks about bullying beyond the playground. And this is when you start to hear more about cyberbullying. So it's the same idea of repeated behaviors and actions that's intended to harm someone, but it's by the use of technology devices. Mm-hmm. And so this is when parental control comes into play. What are we doing when our children are using technology in their bedrooms? What are we doing with their cell phones? Because bullying in the cyber community really involves an intended malicious act towards another person. It could be the posting of a video. It could be evil text messaging. And this is why we've got to have parental controls. We've also have to have adults monitoring at the school level, because bullying does take place beyond the playground.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about bullying. This is National Bullying Prevention Month. Do you have a child who has an issue with bullying? If so, how are you addressing it? Perhaps you have a child who is doing the bullying. Have you, when you found out about it, how did you address that? Give me a call. I'd like to hear from you. 202-319-7810. Brenda, are kids just meaner these days?
I don't think so. I think we see it more. It's communicated more, social media, everything else. I think that it's really a matter of how do we help bring out the best in the children and the young people. I think that one of the things you said earlier, it's like bullying has always happened, right? Well, that doesn't make it okay, right? And we have a responsibility to say, you know what, it's not okay. Yes. There are things that used to be okay and acceptable, and they're not now.
And let me say, absolutely. I completely agree. It wasn't a good thing pre-social media, pre-internet.
Right.
And I would argue that it is worse now, because it's much more difficult to escape.
Yeah. Exactly. I also think that it creates an opportunity for us to really meet the social and emotional needs of our youth. When we talk about meeting their needs, we're talking about establishing norms by which they know how to govern themselves, but also there's an awareness of what they need emotionally and socially. We have so many youth showing up every single day at school with traumatic episodes because they were homeless. But then those same students are faced daily with words that hurt them because of circumstances that are beyond their control. And so, again, I go back to this point of really having schools and our community organizations and our community spaces, like our recreation centers, that are inclusive, that are respectful, that are welcoming to all. And that starts with our leaders really setting norms around how we're going to include everyone in our spaces and in our classrooms.
Right. Let me go to the phone lines real quick. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. LaWanda calling from Clinton. Thanks for calling, LaWanda. What's on your mind?
I wanted to respond about the bullying in the classroom.
Mm-hmm. Go right ahead.
I got an opportunity to witness it firsthand. I worked in the school system for 8 years, and I listened to the young lady that made the comment about how early it started. I actually saw it in as early as kindergarten. I had a student that was 5 years old. He was a lot bigger than the other students in the classroom, and he wanted to just go around. The other kids were really frightened because of his size and his behavior issues.
Mm-hmm.
So,
how was that handled, if at all?
The way it was handled, of course, you have to have things drawn up for students. You have to have kids evaluated. You have to write observations to be able to get the process started to get help. But before you can get help, you know, you have to gather all of the information.
Mm-hmm. But was it? Certainly, you know, that, you know, there are lots of administrative rules that need to be followed. Mm-hmm. But my question is, when you get down to the brass tacks of it, and I think that's probably what parents and students of any age are interested in finding out. And so I ask again, how was that handled after all of the administrative stuff was taken care of?
It was handled very carefully.
Mm-hmm.
It was handled with things put in place. It was handled with having a conversation with the students about when things like that occurred.
Yeah.
So that they could understand, you know, that this person is not going to hurt them, and to get them to be understand that they could come to a responsible adult to tell the adult what was happening to them.
Okay. So, LaWanda, thank you so much for your phone call. I appreciate it. Brenda, you want to make a quick comment?
I do, yeah. No, I'm just thinking about the fact that you asked if things have changed, right? And the thing is that I feel that we have not modeled adults how to have challenging conversations about difference and difference of opinion. And I think that's the thing that we need to really teach our children is how do we understand difference? How do we talk about difference and accept it, whether it's difference in race, disability, sexual orientation, gender, religion, whatever it might be? How do we understand that difference isn't bad and we shouldn't target somebody because they're different from us or the norm? And so I've just been thinking about that and how we really can prevent this, not just respond to bullying.
Yeah, and I think you're right in attempting to be proactive in changing minds. Again, whether it is about gender norms, gender differences, and the like, or just stop being mean.
Yes.
And I say that, you know, maybe slightly tongue in cheek, but I think that how we treat each other has a lot to do with it. But unfortunately, as we have seen in this modern news cycle for at least one could argue the past 2 years, we have bullying comments coming out of the Twitter feed of the president.
Yes.
If we go and see any newspaper, and then you read the comments after any story that may be somewhat divisive, there is bullying, whether it's Washington Post, New York Times, it could be your community paper. You have all of these issues. I want to drill down a little bit more about this, but I've got to take a break. If you were on the line, please stay with us. Kiana calling from Waldorf. thanks for calling. We're going to talk to you. Also, Kevin calling from Springfield, Virginia. We're going to talk to you as well. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about bullying, what parents need to know, how this can be addressed. And as always, this podcast with this entire program on will be on our website on WHUR.com after about 9 o'clock or so. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on 96.3 WHUR. We'll be back in just a few seconds.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. This is National Bullying Prevention Month, and tonight we're taking a closer look at bullying and what you can do about it. My guests are Rochelle Wilson. She's an anti-bullying advocate, and Brenda Barron, Director of Public Policy with the Gay, Lesbian, Straight Education Network. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let's talk to Kiana calling from Waldorf. Kiana, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hello, thank you. Good evening. I think the thing about it is, I think you all pretty much covered it. I think it's about having that communication. Start in the household, being able to have that sense of communication with your children, to find out how their day is and the situations that they come across. And basically, the main things are having empathy and respect. That should be something that they, are taught, as soon as they start, being able to talk. And so when you teach them, hey, you don't treat someone this way, it's something that's just like brushing their teeth. It's a normal habit. But the sad part about it is, no matter what you do when it comes to your child, you don't know how everyone else is parenting their children.
Mm. Interesting point, Kiana. Thank you so much. Let me go to Kevin calling from Springfield, Virginia. Kevin, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, I'm calling. Good evening, everybody. I'm just calling to share a couple of things.
Real quick, go ahead.
Indeed, adults must be responsible for the energy that we bring into every situation. So bullying on our job, we need to speak up and say something. Bullying from the White House, we need to speak up and say something. On November 6th, we need to vote for midterm elections. But again, as well as parents, we need to be mindful of what our children are watching, what they're saying, who their friends are. And when it occurs in our children's lives, we need to be involved in schools. We need to call the principals, call the teachers, and say bullying is unacceptable and it won't happen with my child or against my child. We've got to be people of courage and do something about it.
Right. Yeah, I want to thank you, Kevin, for bringing up the point of voting and getting involved. I mean, I think the thing is that there's only so much we can put on the individual family or individual teacher per se. Okay. But the important thing is structurally from the government, what protections are in place? How do we make sure that schools are held accountable? Not only held accountable with policies that spell out what type of harassment and bullying is wrong, so spelling out sexual orientation, gender identity, religion, race, and other identities. But the other part of it is also making sure that we have policies and funding in place so that teachers have the resources they need to be able to protect those students, to be able to feel like if they stand up and support a student who's being bullied, that they're not going to risk losing their job because they spoke out. Whether it's, no matter what the reason the student's being discriminated against. And so I think that's an important thing to also, there's individual responsibility, but there's also structural responsibility to make sure that teachers and school systems know what to do and are required to do so.
Yes. Kevin, thank you so much for your phone call. And to put a finer point on it, I'm sure you remember just a couple of weeks ago, there was an incident in Virginia where there was an issue about which bathroom a transgender student was to use. That wasn't so much about bullying, but I think it's to the point of what policies are in place that administrators, teachers,
all students, not just transgender students, but all students will understand, because if there is confusion, that can be the fertilizer for untoward treatment.
I agree. Yeah. And can I just say that I'm really proud that D.C., D.C. Public Schools, the D.C. Public Charter Board, specifically D.C. Public Schools, has made a serious commitment around bullying prevention. I had the privilege of owning bullying prevention for DCPS for a little bit of time. And during that tenure, I supported work around the Human Rights Office that also supported policy around bullying prevention. And subsequently, Vincent Gray signed the Youth Prevention Act on bullying. And so there are policy guidance documents that principals can use and administrators can use to guide them in terms of how they respond to students and how they support those students. And principals have resources allocated specifically around bullying. And that came from my office for D.C. Public Schools. So I do know that D.C. has made a commitment to support bullying prevention.
Yeah, and D.C. actually has some really great model policies that are fully inclusive. Actually, listen, we're about to come out with a policy resource with 8 recommendations that schools and school districts can take that can help improve the environment for all students to be safer and harassment free as much as possible. So we can also go to our website, www.glisten.org, which is G-L-S as in Sam, E-N.
You can repeat that real quick.
G-L-S-E-N.org. We have a lot of model policies there, and we'll be having more information, as well as the study I had mentioned earlier is on that website. You know, and the important thing with our a lot of our model policies and our approach to the work is that we look at the whole child when they come into the school. So it's not just like, oh, we're just going to protect LGBTQ students. You know, it's like LGBTQ students are also Black students. They're also immigrants. Yes. They also have disabilities. They also are marginalized because of their religion. And so how do we create environments that can allow that the full student to come to school and thrive themselves?
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Kim, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Kim. What's on your mind?
Yes, I was just wanted to say quickly, I heard you asking, like, what is being done? I'm glad to hear that D.C. has all these policies in place. I'm sad to have had my child bullied at 2 different schools. And like, I took her out of one school because she was being bullied and it didn't seem to be doing anything. So I put her in another school. Finally, to get the bullying to stop, I actually, you know, became extremely proactive, which I'm a hands-on parent anyway. But I actually went to the school and made the school aware of the problem. And my daughter was terrified to the point of tears, where she didn't want to give any names. And I just finally got 2 names out of her. But I made sure that a conference was had, because, of course, the other parent didn't even know what her child was doing. So I'm glad that, like, it got to the point where the children thought they were running up to jump my daughter, and it was actually me and my daughter. So at that point, I turned around and took pictures of the children and then took it to the school. But this was after complaining to the school literally in person for, like, I know I was up at that school at least 5 times in 1 month.
Okay. Well, do you believe that the issue was finally resolved, Kim?
Oh, it was resolved, but to hear that all these policies are in place and there's all this protocol and stuff, that's great. But how much of it is actually put into practice?
Well, let me drill down a little bit about that, and I appreciate your phone call. Let's talk a little bit about that, Rochelle, from the perspective of, first of all, how might a parent know if their child is bullying others, and what might be at the root of that cause?
So for the bully, I mean, I think students will bully for 1 or 2 reasons, and this is based on research and just practice. Students will decide to bully so that they're not bullied. So before the bullying takes place and they become the victim, they will start bullying. And then there's research out there that speaks to students that have been bullied will ultimately end up being bullied if we do not support them socially and emotionally. So, we tend to exude the same behaviors that were impressed upon us if they're not changed. If those habits are not changed, we redirect those behaviors and we put them on someone else.
So, are you suggesting perhaps that some of them may be coming from homes where they may either observe the behavior or that there may be unsettled emotional discourse?
It could be that, and they could see it in their school. And so because they've been bullied, if, for example, you have a third grader that was bullied for 3 years and then they move to a new school in the fourth grade, they're going to be likely in a situation where they're going to decide to bully before they're bullied again. Or by the time they get to high school, because they've been bullied so much, they're just going to exude the same behaviors that were oppressed upon them. And so I think that for families, we also have to really consider supports for the aggressor. I think a lot of times when parents have issues around bullying, Mr. Fisher, we don't want to talk about how do we support the one that bullied. But they also need social and emotional support. What typically happens at the school level, which frustrates families so much, is that they never feel like their child is going to be safe. And every single parent complaint around bullying that I've ever funneled during my tenure of the work, that's what that parent wants to know. How will you ensure me that my child is going to be safe when they've been ganged on at the corner store, their head have been put in the toilet? You know, I've heard all of those scenarios, and schools have got to do a better job in ensuring that the students will be safe. And while I did mention practices and policies in place, it's not going to be to perfection, and which is why our school district, our central office administrators have got to have a fine-tooth comb around monitoring these policies and these procedures to make sure that it's going to have a positive impact and that the families will feel it.
I also want to talk about some of the broader issues that we have seen, let's say, over the past 10 to 20 years, where the persistent bullying, particularly in cyberbullying, has led often to violence by those children who have been bullied. We've seen in some cases, obviously not all, but there have been cases where these students have resorted to school shootings, mm-hmm. or other things. But we've also seen situations where students have been literally bullied to death, where they have taken their own lives. This is particularly the case in the LGBTQ community. Talk to me a little about that, Brenda, and why it seems to be more prevalent in the LGBTQ community than perhaps in the straight community.
Yeah, I mean, when you first brought this up, the example of 9-year-old Jamal out in Denver, who this past few months has bullied persistently, and unfortunately, he at 9 years old took his own life. That's just heart-wrenching and unacceptable. And I think part of what we're talking about with the LGBTQ community is that it's also some students aren't out to their parents, they aren't out to their families, or even to the point where their families don't accept them. So they not only are having the bullying happening at school or on the internet or where it might be, they don't have an adult community who understands necessarily what they're going through. And even if they are, sometimes are told that it's their fault because they're the ones that are being themselves, or they're the ones that are being different. If you just, you know, acted like you should, or did, you know, so there's that sometimes that lack of support at home, especially.
Is that why we see a growth now in many high schools that may have a support group club meeting for it never occurred to me, but now it makes sense, because you attend those clubs at school doesn't necessarily mean that your family knows at home.
Exactly. Yeah, that's where GSAs are so important. They're either gay straight alliances or gender sexuality alliances, where students, you know, are able to come together and sometimes talk and support one another. Also do community education, school education.
Strength in numbers.
Yeah, advocacy, and get a real sense of their self, but as well as it's, you know, also allies of LGBTQ folks who then can learn more about what they're going through, be more empathetic, be that ally that then has the skill set to stand up and do the intervention when maybe they're being bullied. And so GSAs are really critical, and yes, have grown quite a bit over the past, you know, 20 years in our schools, and that is key. And those also, you know, every GSA needs to have a faculty advisor. So to have that supportive adult with them that they know they can go to is critical.
Need to take a break. When we come back, more of this conversation as we discuss National Bullying Prevention Month. What parents need to know, how do you talk to your children about this if you suspect that your child is being bullied? And what about the school? How do you talk to school administrators? We'll talk about all of that on the other side of this break. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We are continuing our conversation about National Bullying Prevention Month as we take a closer look at how this can be addressed. Brenda, you have an event that you wanted to share with us.
Yeah, next week, coalition partnership with the National Black Justice Coalition, as well as the Education Trust. Here in D.C., we're having a roundtable conversation focused on the experiences of LGBTQ youth of color specifically, and how we as the community can really help to improve the environment for them in our schools. And one of the, we're going to be providing three recommendations. One, making sure that we have curriculum that's inclusive of the full lived experience of students of all of their identities. Also ensuring we have mental health support. But also, what is the place of nonprofit organizations in our community to provide those supports? There's a lot of expertise that we could have a real community schools connection to make that everybody that's listening today could think, huh, what organization might I connect with? At GLSEN, we have almost 50 chapters across the country, but a lot of our other partners also have local organizations that can really tap into that to make our schools better.
When and where is this event?
The event is going to be at the Duke Ellington School of the Arts here in D.C. on October 30th, so Tuesday, from 9:30 a.m. to 10:30 a.m.
Okay, something to mark down on the calendar. One of the other issues, one could argue long-term detrimental effects are educational outcomes, and there's something you wanted to share about that as well.
Yeah, definitely. The one of the things that, you know, our studies have found is that not only, obviously, does the bullying and the harassment and the lack of policy really impact the students' educational experience in terms of just feeling safe every day. But we've also found that in schools where there actually are policies, students do feel safer. They do actually have higher educational outcomes. They show up, they don't have as many absentee rates. And also one of the things that we found on more of the negative end that we often don't think about is that, especially with LGBTQ students, but also, you know, students of color and other marginalized students, they actually often are the ones that are punished. They are disciplined more for being bullied, which just doesn't make sense. As Rochelle mentioned earlier, it's like they might be the ones taken out of class, or Kim, I think it was Kim who called, you know, her child had to move schools because they were being bullied.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk to me a little bit more about that? Because I, when you are talking about someone who is being victimized, terrorized, or as Kim, the caller mentioned, why would they be sanctioned by the school they're attending?
Well, right. It doesn't make sense, first of all. So, but I think the thing is that when a student is, say, acting as they might say, maybe showing affection in the hallways, straight students may not get punished, or if you're not dressing as they think your gender should be, if they will not recognize you as a transgender student, correct, and they're saying you're wearing effeminate clothes, you're not meeting dress code because you're a boy, but you're actually a girl, you're a girl, so you're dressing to your gender. They can get punished for that. Just, you know, as with, you know, often students of color, we know that, you know, black students especially get punished at much higher rates, both mm-hmm. in school and out of school, than white students. That happens because often there's, you know, an altercation, and then the black student gets punished, but the white kid gets off. Or, I mean, that's simplifying it, but that happens. And imagine then it's a student of color who's LGBT too. It exasperates their differentness, and that they are bringing this on themselves. And it makes no sense. You're absolutely right. But unfortunately, until we address the root problems, it's a reality that we have to change.
And I think the other issue is that for those that have been bullied, they internalize that. And because they don't have opportunities to speak to what they're feeling internally, they may exhibit negative behaviors that are not necessarily related to bullying, exactly, but behaviors that will remove them from the classroom. And this is when you will start to see suspension numbers increase. And we're trying to figure out, why was a scholar, you know, suspended because he or she was bullied? It's because they're now internalizing what has transpired, that no one knew was happening, because we're not necessarily always in tune with bullying that's happening in the classroom. And so for that caller that called in and said that she observed it, it's happening a lot in classrooms, and teachers are not observing it. They're seeing it as developmental milestones, and, you know, children will just do this, and it's horseplay, which is why education is so critical. We've got to educate our principals. We've had to educate our teachers, because there are a lot of missed opportunities to identify bullying.
I don't want to talk too much about politics, but I do need to ask Brenda about this piece coming out of the New York Times today, something that I mentioned earlier. And I just want to, if I could, have your response to it, in that the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services wanted to legally define a person's gender as either male or female as determined by their genitals at birth. This would be a reversal of Obama-era rules by the Trump administration that recognize and protected transgender individuals under federal civil rights laws. This report coming out today, from your position, what about this concerned you? I'm sure it does.
Well, yes. First of all, the Department of Education has already rescinded guidance to protect transgender students under Title IX, which is the federal education law that protects students based on gender. So that has already happened, and it had negative effects on students in schools, because basically schools are like, now what do we do? And when they thought they had to protect transgender students, they now are stepping back from that. What the reported proposed memo is, which advocates really haven't seen yet, so we don't know exactly what it says. But what this would do, if they would narrowly define sex by what your genital were at birth, right, is just cruel. It's just actually a very vicious sort of attack on transgender people, especially to say, you don't exist. Like, we're going to basically erase your existence in federal protections at all levels. And for students, that's like, it's been scary. I mean, the community has in the past day, you know, really been like, what do we do? What does this mean? Oh my gosh. And like, please, you know, when we don't know what it means exactly if it were to happen, but it would be detrimental in terms of saying you don't exist. You know, how do you tell a child, like, mm-hmm. you know? And the thing about it to mention too is that it flies in the face of medical professionals. It flies in the face of, you know, psychological professionals. It flies in the face of people who knowing just who they are. Like, every medical association, pediatrics, has come out saying transgender students, you know, or children, you know, and adolescents, you know, need to live their lives as they are.
Well, certainly an issue to be seen, and certainly I'm sure we'll all be observing how this impacts the issue of bullying, if it does indeed become policy. To the point that I mentioned earlier, Rochelle, how should parents best address bullying, not only with their children, but also with administrators? We are no longer in the era of sticks and stones.
That's a great question. I think parents, first of all, must pay attention to some small warning signs. You want to be mindful of your child's behaviors. If there's been a sudden change in a behavior daily, you want to ask questions. You want to look at their clothing. If you see their clothes have been torn slightly, if you see scratches, if you see bruises, if you're starting to hear things like, I have a headache all of the time, and now your child who was suddenly so passionate about school and had so much energy about school is now that child that doesn't want to go to school. And you have to have a routine around asking those questions. And then when there is a change in that pattern, addressing it with the administrator and the teacher immediately. I think one question that parents must begin to ask all students is whether or not they have a safe adult in their building that they can talk to. I heard one caller talk about, you know, the safety and they couldn't talk to anyone. And this is why it's so important that schools have so many platforms for reporting bullying. There should be opportunities for anonymous reporting because children are scared and they are afraid. They don't want to be picked on. They don't want to be hurt if someone knows that they reported bullying. But parents have to ask, who in that school can you talk to if something happens to you? Because part of the issue is that students don't feel safe and they won't say anything. And so when a family identifies a potential bullying incident, they must address it immediately and demand that an administrator addresses it. Sometimes principals are busy. I've been a principal and I know things get challenging. But one of the things that I say when I'm coaching principals and even teachers, that when you hear bullying, that's a priority. Right? Because a family needs to know that their child is going to be safe. And because we understand through the CDC that bullying related suicide is the third leading cause of death for our youth, that's a problem. And we have to make sure that we're spending time for this urgent matter to address it and eradicate it.
I've got about a minute left. That's how you address it with the children. Now, about the administrators, because of all of the things that you have just suggested, how best might you approach a teacher or an administrator if you suspect but do not know that your child is being bullied or is bullying?
You share on both sides. You share that I'm concerned that I think my child may be bullying other kids. You ask if they've heard of that. Have they observed any of those behaviors? If your child is potentially the victim, you share it immediately and you share any anecdotal information that you have pertaining to why you feel like your child was bullied. My child said this. I saw this. I'm concerned that the patterns of behavior have shifted and I need you to address it and establish a timeline by which the teacher will follow up and come back with either substantiating the bullying or saying that it's not. And if you don't feel like a teacher is really handling the problem efficiently, then you want to elevate it to the administrator. And it has to be a very tight timeline because bullying is a serious matter.
Yeah, there it is. I think that's a good place to end this conversation, at least for today. I want to thank both of you, Rochelle Wilson and Brenda Barron, for coming in and sharing with us. And as always, some of the information that we have discussed during this program will be posted on our website on WHUR.com. That'll happen a little bit after 9 o'clock. Again, ladies, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Monday, October 22nd. I'm Harold Fisher. You can tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Now, stay tuned for The Connection.